Decisions, decisions. Had some decisions this week, didn't we? Truth is, each one of us, in fact, many of us, maybe all of us, are still living with the consequences of bad decisions. That's, you know, we're not perfect. We don't make the best decision all the time. So the reality is, there are consequences. Consequences don't go away even when grace exists. Some, yes. All, no. So today, it's very important that we talk about something about bad decisions. And that is, sometimes the reality is those decisions, the consequences are short-term, sometimes they're long-term, sometimes they're eternal. Lifelong, but there are consequences. The Bible proves that. It says that. I'll give you some examples. So today I want to talk about not only the fact that we make bad decisions, we're just going to say that's a given, but we are going to talk about somewhat of how do we recover from bad decisions. Because one of the things about making great decisions is recovering from bad decisions. So, John, let's look at a couple passages. All have sinned and fall short of God's glorious standard. We all know that passage. In fact, many of us who have maybe talked to somebody about faith in Christ have used that passage at one point or another to talk about the fact that we're all broke. We're all sinners. We all need grace. Without that, without God's gift of grace through Jesus Christ, we've all fallen short. We've all made bad decisions. We've all done stuff we ought not do. Or we've not done stuff we should have done. Second passage. We all make many mistakes. James chapter 3, NLT, very beginning. Isn't that just a nice little paraphrase? So, not only have we sinned, but we've made mistakes too. Mistakes come from choices that are often based on our flesh or based on our emotions, reactions. We make mistakes. We act too fast. We act hastily. We act on wrong information. We make mistakes. Third one. But Jesus said, "My purpose is to give life in all its fullness." So, the good news is, He doesn't leave us where we are. He always gives us grace, He always gives us purpose, He always gives us direction, and He always redeems us when we submit to Him. He doesn't leave us how He found us. So these are just some things we need to look at as bottom line. So if you feel like you're stuck in the rut this morning of consequences from bad decisions, because that's where you don't want to be. You don't want to be stuck in the rut. Yes, we have consequences. Yes. But that's not where we have to remain. We don't have to stay stuck there. Couple of things. If you are stuck and you feel that way, let me give you a baseball analogy. I don't know if you like baseball, you watch baseball, you care anything about baseball at all. Okay. Probably the best hitter in baseball of the last 50 years was a guy that probably wasn't a very nice guy, but it's a name you know. It's a guy named Ted Williams, played for the Boston Red Sox. Does anybody know what his lifetime batting average was in general? Okay, 406. Thank you, Dale. Okay. Nobody comes close to that now. Okay? But you've heard, if you have ever listened to baseball coaches or commentators, 406. What does hitting 400 mean? It means 6 times out of 10, you didn't do what you wanted to do. six times out of 10, you failed in your purpose. You know, watching kids, you know, I watch a lot of baseball. I follow Luke around and watch a lot of baseball. And those kids, you know, they either strike out or they pop up, and it just, you know, they just get so frustrated after a while. And it often comes to where it takes a coach to remind them, say, it's just baseball. Next week you go out, you'll hit 500, but today it sucked. Okay. It was not good. Okay. Failure. So it inserts this idea of failure in here, which sometimes has to do with making bad decisions. But even Ted Williams only hit 400, okay? And he was the best hitter. That's my little analogy there. Here's a quote from a guy named J. Wallace Hamilton. I want to show it to you. Here's what Mr. Hamilton said. He said, people are training for success when they should be training for failure. Hang in there. Failure is far more common than success. Poverty is more prevalent than wealth, and disappointment more normal than arrival. It's seeing it for what it is. Why am I saying this? Because it's human to make bad decisions. Not good, it's human. And we deal with other humans who sometimes do not understand the grace, nor the peace, nor the direction that we say we share. And so it even complicates matters even more, because we do deal with people, we live with people, we work with people who do not have this. So we are around and are influenced by people and ideas from all different directions, and they're not always God-centered. God decisions. We've talked over the last several weeks about how we go through a process of decisions, we have certain factors, we have foundations, and all of that. Okay, all those things that we've talked about, it comes to bear upon, okay, even after all of that, we're still not always going to make the perfect decision because we're human. We don't have God's perspective. Sometimes we don't have God's gumption to do the right thing, make the right decision. And we will do what is expeditious or convenient. So what Mr. Hamilton is saying, I don't think is that we should actually train to fail. What he's saying is that we need to be ready to know how to deal with our failure. What is it we do to do what we're talking about today? When we make bad decisions, how do we recover? What are things that are important that we remember in order to try to recover from the bad decisions that we make? All right. The story that I want to use today is, you're going to think, where did that, why in this one? But here we go, okay? We're going to go to Joshua chapter 2, verse 8. This is the story of that great biblical hero, Rahab. She made the Hall of Faith, folks, in Hebrews chapters 11, 12. She's a part of that list. So let's look at the biblical story about Rahab for just a minute and then talk about that. Joshua 2:8. I didn't put the verses up there, so if you've got a Bible, just follow with me as best you can. Then Joshua secretly sent out two spies from the Israelite camp in Acacia. He instructed them, spy out the land on the other side of the Jordan River, especially around Jericho. So the two men set out and came to the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there that night. But someone told the king of Jericho, some Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent orders to Rahab, bring out the men who have come into your house. They are spies sent here to discover the best way to attack us. Rahab, who had hidden the two men, replied, the men were here earlier, but I didn't know where they were from. They left the city at dusk as the city gates were about to close, and I don't know where they went. If you hurry, you can probably catch up with them. But she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them beneath piles of flax. So the king's men went looking for the spies along the road leading to the shallow crossing places of the Jordan River. And as soon as the king's men had left, the city gate was shut. Before the spies went to sleep that night, Rahab went up on the roof to talk with them. This is what she said. "I know the Lord has given you this land," she told them. We are all afraid of you. Everyone is living in terror, for we have heard how the Lord made a dry path for you through the Red Sea when you left Egypt. And we know what you did to Sihon and Og, the two Amorite kings east of the Jordan River, whose people you completely destroyed. No wonder our hearts have melted in fear. No one has the courage to go fighting after hearing such things. For the Lord your God is the supreme God of the heavens above the earth and below. Now swear to me by the Lord that you will be kind to me and my family since I have helped you. Give me some guarantee that when Jericho is conquered, you will let me live, along with my father and my mother, my brothers and my sisters, and all their families. This is how they said. This is what they responded to her. They said, "We offer our own lives as guarantee for your safety," the men agreed. "If you don't betray us, we will keep our promise when the Lord gives us the land." Then, since Rahab's house was built into the city wall, she let them down by a rope through the window. "Escape to the hill country," she told them. "Hide there for 3 days until the men who are searching for you have returned. Then go your way." Before they left, the men told her, "We can guarantee your safety only if you leave this scarlet rope hanging from the window. And all your family members, your father, mother, brothers, and all your relatives must be here inside the house. If they go out into the street, they will be killed, and we cannot be held to our oath. But we swear that no one inside this house will be killed. Not a hand will be laid on any of them. And if you betray us, however, we are not bound by this oath in any way." And she said to them, "I accept your terms." And she sent them on their way, leaving the scarlet rope hanging from the window. The spies went up into the hill country and stayed there 3 days. The men who were chasing them had searched everywhere along the road, but they finally returned to the city without success. Then the two spies came down from the hill country, crossed the Jordan River, and reported to Joshua all that had happened to them. "The Lord will certainly give us the whole land," they said, "for all the people in the land are terrified of us." Now, before I really get into this and talk about it for a minute, do you remember the story of the Passover? Okay. What was it that they were supposed to do in order for the angel to pass over the house where death was going to take place in the firstborn? Okay. The lamb that had been sacrificed and roasted, they were supposed to put the blood over the door. Anything sound familiar? Okay. You got the scarlet rope or the scarlet thread or whatever that's supposed to be there by the door. Just kind of interesting. All right. So let's look at this for just a minute. Too many times we look at this story from the perspective of the Hebrews. You know, the story. Okay, after the spies came out, they said, "Okay, let's go, it's all ours." And then what did God tell the people to do? You know the story. What did He tell them to do? How many times? Remember? What were they supposed to do when they were through? Shout. Blow trumpets. Okay? And the walls came tumbling down, right? Okay? So God did the fighting, right? Okay. See, we remember the Hebrew part very, very well. But I want you to think about this from Rahab's point of view for just a minute or two. This was God's opportunity for Rahab's life to change. Who was she? What was she? We don't know why she was what she was, but we know what she was. Either it was either somebody else's choice or it was her choice. It may have been an act in desperation. We don't know. But this was God's opportunity for her life to change. And she had a decision before. She had a decision sometime made, sometime in the past, a decision had been made, and it was not good. But now she had another decision facing her. How significant was this change? Okay, did you hear David? You know, biblically, if you track it back, okay, ultimately, let's talk about some of the people that were her descendants. Okay, there was a guy named Boaz who was her descendant. And if you look another story in the Bible, Boaz was the kinsman redeemer for Ruth, right? Okay, why is that significant? Because then that family line led to David, who was the king of Israel, the only unified king of Israel. And then ultimately, where does that go? To Jesus. So it serves as a reminder to us that decisions have long-reaching consequences. Not to say that every decision doesn't have its permanent consequences, but every decision has a ripple effect that we just don't understand. Good, bad, no matter what. All right, are you with me on this so far? So what do we learn from example? Here's some things that I like for us to think about. In order to recover from a bad decision, we have to do a couple of things. First thing we have to do is we have to adjust our direction. And where does that begin? If you're going to recover from a bad decision, what do you think the first thing you have to do is? Admit you made a bad decision. You got to own it. Until we own the fact that our decision is flawed in some way, we'll never do anything about the bad decision. Because we'll always keep explaining it away or blaming it on somebody else. So what we have to do whenever we make that bad decisions, the sooner we own up to it, the better the recovery is going to be. The sooner we don't have to live with the full range of consequences that can happen. If we'll own it. So that is where it starts. We've got to adjust our direction. First of all, we have to own it. And then we can adjust. So here are two things that we can do. Once we've owned it, what can we do to adjust our direction? All right. So, you ever heard of Murphy's Law? What's Murphy's Law? Okay. If anything can go bad, it will. If anything can go wrong, it will. Murphy's Law. In fact, here, if you go to www.murphyslaw.com, there's some things listed there that I think are really appropriate, and you'll kind of get a chuckle, but here are the things that we need to hear from this. Okay? There's some things that precede Murphy's Law. Here are those things that precede. And the funny thing is, these are things you've heard us say. And it's not because it was at Murphy's Law.com. Okay? Because they're true. Okay, here they are. They're not, I don't think I listed them up there, but number one, you will learn lessons. Okay? You will learn lessons. Two, there are no mistakes, only lessons. Okay? Three, a lesson is repeated until it's learned. Now, have you not heard us talk about that before? The fact that God oftentimes will let us return to a decision or a place until we trust Him and we make the right decision, or the change that we allow Him to affect in us takes effect. We'll keep coming back to that same place over and over again. Fourth, if you don't learn the easy lessons, they get harder. So yes, we repeat them, but that doesn't mean that it gets any easier. And five, you'll know when you've learned a lesson when your actions change. Okay? So here's a little analogy that I think proves that really well. I'm going to read it because it's not mine. I found it somewhere, but it works good. Okay? A woman walked down the street. There was a huge hole. She fell into it and couldn't get out of it. Once she finally had developed, she finally had help getting out, it took years to recover. Two, a woman walked down a street. She saw a huge hole. She remembered how traumatic it was to be in the hole. She fell into it again. She couldn't get out. Once she finally had help getting out, it took her years to recover. Three, a woman walked down a street. She remembered the hole. She tried to walk around the edge of the hole, but she fell into it again. She couldn't get out, but once she had help getting out, it took her years to recover. Four, a woman came to a street, and she decided to walk down another street. A different decision. A different line of action. So until she decided to make an entirely different decision, she kept making the same decision. And we've talked about, making decisions over these several weeks, how sometimes there are things that we just kind of ought to know we should or shouldn't do. And that when we do those things that we don't, there's not a lot of deliberation about many of those things. We just ought to do the right thing. But even when we don't, there's still a way to recover. And it's by choosing to do the right thing. Choosing the God thing. The thing that we know is obvious. A lot of what we're talking about that gets us in trouble is stuff that we know what God wants us to do. It's not complicated. It's not, do I buy this car or this car? All right. Adjusting our direction. Here's another law. It's not really mine, but I think it's pretty good. And it's not true all the time, but it's a good law. And it is, right feelings follow right choices. When you make the right choice, your feelings will get there. Sometimes it's long, I understand that. But when you make the right choice, you'll get there. Which means one of the things we can't do in order to adjust our direction is continue to function on feelings. Because our feelings are deceptive. Our emotions are deceptive. We have to make decisions based on all that stuff we've been talking about that God gives us in our relationship with Him. If we make the right choice, then our feelings will catch up because God will affirm and confirm the right choices and will build us and strengthen us and help us to trust Him. And all of that process will then bring that wholeness and that peace to our hearts when we make and act on the right choices. Even after we haven't before. So we've got to trust God. Second, so the first thing is you've got to adjust your actions. Okay, you can't keep doing the same thing over and over again. What do we call that? When you do the same thing over and over again and you expect something different to happen? That's insanity. Okay, it's that popular definition. All right, secondly, if you want to adjust your direction, you've got to adjust your thoughts. Because you won't do things differently until you begin to think differently. Look at Rahab's story again. Rahab had changed her thoughts. Somewhere, sometime, somehow, she had come to the point where she actually trusted the God of the Hebrews. I doubt seriously, back earlier in that time when she made that decision to do what she did for a living, to make whatever she had to do to get through, at that point, she was trusting her own smarts. And it didn't work very well. But here's an opportunity to trust the God of the Hebrews. And she took it. But she had already, at some point, decided that she would consider trusting the God of the Hebrews. That was a decision. And then the opportunity presented itself, and she did act on it. So she had to change her thoughts at some point in time to where she would trust this God. And she would put faith in Him. She calls Him the Lord at first. Then she says, okay, you're God. And then she comes back to the Lord again, the way that it's written in the story. Now, what she actually said or did, I'm assuming that the story was recorded correctly. Great story. So she was betting her life on Him. She was looking at herself differently than she had probably ever looked at herself before. She had a way to start fresh all over again. She could have stayed stuck where she was. She could have said, I'm not worth it. It's not something I deserve. Everything that I have done, the way that I've lived, the decisions I've made, I deserve to be punished. I deserve to be belittled. I deserve to be on the edge of society. She could have had that mindset, self-defeating, but she didn't. And I think from that, we need to remember that we don't need to beat ourselves up either. We make bad decisions. We sin. But if God expected us to continue to punish ourselves, then He would have not allowed Jesus to die on the cross. And that's not His purpose nor His plan for us. So whenever we make bad decisions, even though there are consequences, He does not expect us nor desire for us to continue to pulverize ourselves over and over and over again with guilt over the fact that we made a bad decision. There's grace, there's mercy, there's the ability to recover. We can change. Again, there's consequences we may have to live with. But sometimes, you know what? Sometimes those consequences become the core for our ministry, for what we have to share with people, for what we get to say when someone else has fallen into the same hole we've fallen into, because we have allowed God to redeem and do exactly what He said He would, what Paul said God would do in Romans 8:28. All things work together for good, those who are called according to His purpose, those that love the Lord. So even the stuff, even our bad decisions, our failures, God can find a way to redeem those and use those for His kingdom, if we will let Him. That's how we recover. And again, it begins with ownership, because if we don't own it, we have no ministry. Does that make sense? Because all we're doing is modeling a behavior that can't be used by God. But taking ownership, God can use that, because He begins to work whenever we're honest about it. So I guess in all of this, we don't have to live with guilt. He doesn't want us to live with guilt. Guilt's purpose is to drive us to God. Guilt's purpose is that we will go let God work in us and use us and redeem us. You and I can have a victory by pressing through and making the great decision to release our shame and our guilt. And in order to forgiveness, to experience forgiveness, that's what it's what's got to happen. Let's talk about forgiveness for just a minute. Some of these things I've just shared with you. Here we go. First of all, forgiveness is available And you need to experience forgiveness in two dimensions. We've talked about one, but I'm going to talk about the one from God first. God's part's a done deal. If you were to happen to look at some point in time, even before Jesus, we hear God's heart for us about forgiveness. How He wants us to understand and experience the forgiveness that He offers us. So what I want you to do is, for homework, go back to Psalm 103, verse 1 through 18. Psalm 103, verse 1 through 18. And look at that psalm, and if you're having a trouble with believing that God could forgive you for whatever decision or thing you have done, put Psalm 103, 1 through 18 in front of your head, in front of your face. Read that and meditate on it. Because this is God's heart. This is why Jesus Christ died on the cross. It's because He wants you to believe and live this. So I encourage you to go back and do that on your own time. The God part is hard for us to accept because we don't understand how God could love us that much. That He could actually forgive us even when we willfully make a bad decision. See, we believe He could forgive us when we make stupid decisions, but we don't believe that He loves us enough to forgive us when we intentionally make a bad decision. But He does. So we need to remember that. We need to believe that. We need to trust that. The second part of that is what I've been spending a while talking to you about just over the last 5 or 10 minutes, and that is, us. We have to allow ourselves to experience forgiveness and not use our guilt as a club where we beat ourselves over our heads or we see ourselves in a way that God doesn't see us. So what do you do whenever you feel like you are living in guilt and you're stuck? There you go. Let's say you've even taken the step to where you believe that God forgives you. How do you get to the point where you forgive you? Because see, sometimes it's easy to think, God forgives me. I know Jesus died on the cross. But then you think, you know, but I need to feel guilty about it because it's really wrong and He wants me to feel guilty. Well, yeah, He did want you to feel guilty till you went to Him. And then He wants you to stop feeling guilty because you've gone to Him. And you've trusted Him. It's the devil that wants to keep you feeling like you got to keep beating yourself up. It's not God. Once you've handled it rightly, but we have to do something. And I'm going to be honest with you. The way God gets me through stuff like this a lot of times is He just overwhelms me. He allows me to be so overwhelmed, I just say, I can't. And then I begin to see that I just need to stop beating myself up. But I have to be overwhelmed first before I realize I'm overwhelmed and it's not my job. So we've got to forgive ourselves because God's forgiven us. If we've submitted it to God, we've repented, we've trusted Him, we've gone through it, we've started making right decisions, we no longer need to punish ourselves because we're not God. Get over it. There you go. And my thing is, stop it. Just stop it. Don't, you know, but it's not that easy. It's easy to say, not easy to do. Remember this. Philippians 1, chapter 6. You've heard it before. This is God's heart for you. I am sure that God, who began the good work within you, will continue His work until it is finally finished on the day when Jesus Christ comes back again. It is right that I should feel this way about you, for you have a very special place in my heart. I know Paul was saying that to the Philippians, but that's the way God feels about us. We need to not try to be God and let God's forgiveness be enough. And He knows that we're works in progress. And today is the day to get through the bump. So we've talked about recovering. What have you heard about recovering from bad decisions? Let it go. Don't dwell on it. Does that mean ignore it? Okay. Acknowledge. Own. Remember, own it. Okay. All right. What else? Learn from it. Go down a different street. We cannot do it on our own. We cannot do what it takes. Sometimes we can't do what it takes to make the decisions without this relationship with God. All these things that we've talked about, under running behind, through, and within everything that we've been talking about. We will always, without God's grace, mercy, direction, and empowering, we will always make bad decisions. But with it, sometimes we still don't get it right because we're broken. We're not perfect. But what we want to do is whatever we do, we want it to be done the way Jesus would do it. And we're still going to get it wrong sometimes. Okay, did you hear that? But I've got something else that we also have to swallow. Sometimes there are consequences for making the God decisions. And we cannot start avoiding making God decisions because there are consequences. It's going to be more and more prevalent in the coming days that when we make God decisions, there will be consequences. Consequences that no one welcomes. Absolutely. No, there's good and bad. Absolutely. It's just we cannot always think that just because there's a negative consequence from a decision, that means it was a wrong decision. Does that make sense? If we've made a decision that we know to be a God decision, that doesn't mean it was a bad decision if there's a consequence that is either not convenient or not fun or not enjoyable or not easy. Don't assume that that was the wrong decision. Will Rogers, you've heard me quote it before. Everybody serves some useful purpose, even if it's just to be a horrible example. And so, it is the grace of God that we can actually have the opportunity to learn from other people what they've learned through their mistakes and their failures and their bad decisions. We don't, I wish all our kids just got that. That they can understand that the reason why we share all the things we share with kids is because we want them not to make the bad decisions that we made. We want them to learn from our bad decisions because we don't want them repeated, right? Wouldn't it be great if all of them would just get that? But for some reason, it doesn't work that way. The reason why I felt like we needed to do this over the last several weeks just has to do with I believe that God wants us to be responsible with the opportunities that we have. And that He wants us to be in relationship with Him. He wants us to seek Him. He wants us to depend on Him. And it's not just for the biggies. But He also wants us to know that whenever we do get knee-deep or neck-deep and we get sometimes over our heads, that we can recover. God is for us. He's not against us. Father, thank You for speaking to us. Thank You for helping us understand that the dialogue that we're having with You about this is not just relegated to 9:30 to 10:45 on Sunday morning, but that, Lord, the truth is You're speaking to us about this already and all the time, and You're going to use this in our lives. And we just thank You for that. Lord, help us to make good decisions, to trust You, and to be a blessing to others and a blessing to You. I ask this in Jesus' name.